The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, generosity, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Galatians chapter 5, verses 22 and 23. Hey everybody, I'm Chris Dowd.
And I'm Reagan Gilliland.
And this is Off Script, a podcast where every week we take a deeper dive on last Sunday's sermon, talk about the theology behind it, and get a chance to discuss anything that ended up on the cutting room floor. We're excited to get started for today. We're starting a new sermon series. This is our first sermon series of 2021, and we should probably just say here at the outset that we are recording this podcast, in the wake of a pretty tumultuous event in the nation's history. So we're talking, of course, about the storming of the Capitol. So whatever that was yesterday, as Congress was certifying the election results. So if some of our commentary ends up talking about that, it's because it's pretty recent, more recent than when you'll be hearing this. But anyway, the sermon series is about the general rules of Wesley's United Societies that became the general rules of the United Methodist Church. It's a great subject for any day. It just so happens that this particular sermon was on Do No Harm, which I guess is timely.
Yes, it was good timing, I guess, to really dig into it. Because as you were recording it, everything was unfolding as you were speaking.
Insane.
Yeah.
Because we're in this weird time where we're recording early so that we can put together an online experience that's as good as we can make it.
Yeah.
And it takes a couple of days to do that.
Yeah.
So the sermon ends up getting preached again to those who are on campus on Sunday morning. And we have time, obviously, to update things and tweak or whatever. But it's kind of fresh for you and I right now. And for the nation right now. So Anywho, do no harm. Here we go.
So I love the general rules. I love them.
Yeah, I do too.
And so I'm really excited that we're digging into this again. I know I emailed small group leaders, a book to lead their classes through three simple rules. It's a tiny, it could fit into your pocket. It's a very tiny book, by Reuben P. Is it Job
or Job? Yeah.
Job. But I think these are such a really good way to guide us as we go into this new year. I think a lot of us are going into this new year thinking about how can we just be better, because I think a lot has been revealed in 2020. And so I'm excited to dig into them. So I did want to talk, you open your sermon talking about you and Whitney first finding a home at Arapahoe United Methodist Church. So first, how do you feel?
Second best church on court.
How do you feel that Arapahoe is going down the toilet
now
with that leader? What do you feel? Is that hard to see that they've got such a horrible leader now?
You got to explain that for anybody who doesn't know.
So my husband is the senior pastor at Arapahoe now.
Yeah, Arapahoe. Everybody who has been listening to us for very long or has been around the church very long knows that I was raised Catholic. Went to Notre Dame, we were very active in the church growing up. We were there every Sunday that I can remember. The handful of times that we missed is because somebody was sick. It was a small country parish, and so my stepfather and I helped mow the lawn and care for the grounds, and we were pretty close with our priest. And so the church had always been a central part of my life. In my 20s, one of my undergraduate majors was in Russian, so I spent a fair amount of time in the Russian Orthodox Church, Greek Orthodox Church. Like that stream of the Christian movement, I think we can still call it that, really kind of occupied much of my formative years. So Eastern Orthodox and Roman Catholic, kind of the ancient pre-Reformation strains of the church. My father is a member of the Church of the Incarnation, my father and his family are members of the Church of the Incarnation down in 75. And that is a very high church. Yeah. It feels very Catholic, very formal. And so when Whit and I were getting serious in our relationship, we were looking for churches that felt right for both of us. And, it's often the case, you meet with a lot of couples who are joining the church, and you've done this at Lover's Lane as well, it's often the case that the Methodist Church is landing ground
yes.
for people from different traditions, uh-huh. right? For a lot of reasons,
yeah,
a lot of wonderful reasons. In our case, Witt had, what I said in the sermon is that she had gone to the preschool at First Ann Arbor. She grew up in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And Fumpkin is the name of that preschool.
Okay.
And her family had always had very tender feelings for First Ann Arbor because of that. Her mom had grown up Methodist. Her sister-in-law was Methodist, so her brother at that point was in the Methodist church. So they had Methodist connections, but really for her it was about the preschool. Mm-hmm. And I always say, I mean, I'm a big believer in Methodist preschools. That's mm-hmm. what got us to the church to begin with. Both of our kids are products of Methodist preschools. Anyway, I digress. So she said, let's try the Methodist church. So I was living in Addison at the time and working on I was a consultant. I was working on a project up in McKinney. And so I would drive down Arapahoe, go to 75 and go north to McKinney for work. And I drove past Arapahoe every day.
Yeah.
It's the only Methodist church that I ever really noticed, which is kind of, I mean, at the time, First Richardson was not on Arapahoe. It was down on Beltline.
Yeah.
And I said, well, there's Methodist church, you know, not far from my apartment. She was living in Atlanta at the time. And so one weekend we just tried Arapahoe. And I'm telling you, from the moment we walked in that church, I love that church. Obviously, we have a lot of relationships still with folks at that church. So there's personal connections. But like, it just, when you go in that sanctuary, it kind of feels like you're in somebody's living room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a smaller church. I mean, it's a 1,200 member church. It's not a small church, but the building itself seats, I don't know, 400 maybe.
Yeah, 400.
Like
I mean, I feel like it sits more than it looks. So it just feels really intimate.
It feels very intimate, right? You know, the sermon, the music, like it was enough liturgy that I felt comfortable having been raised in a liturgical tradition, but it was kind of community feeling enough mm-hmm. that it really appealed to Witt. And so, you know, we walked in the door and never left. I mean, mm-hmm. it was 20 years ago, 20 years ago this month. It's where I heard of my call to ordinary ministry. It's where, like, the pastors of that church went to First Ann Arbor to marry Whitney and I. Max was baptized in that sanctuary. So I've got a lot of fond memories of that church.
Yeah.
Love it dearly. And, you know, it's a shame that they're under such questionable leadership.
I know.
No, I'm kidding. Scott's awesome. Scott is awesome. I was so excited. I think I found out that Scott was going to Arapahoe before we found out you were coming here.
Mm.
I was just really thrilled for them that they got such a wonderful human being as Scott. And anyway, and I was thrilled for him that he got to be at such an amazing church.
Yeah, he loves it. So knowing that you have studied, you know, being raised Catholic, the Orthodox, you know, all of that, did you ever feel like something was missing? Or, I mean, you fell in love with Methodist theology.
Yeah.
So can you talk about what kind of sets us apart?
Yeah. So, you know, it was a couple of things. I mean, theologically speaking, the fact that we begin and in the middle we focus on and we end with grace. I mean, we're mm-hmm. shot through with grace. It's the core of the Methodist understanding of the Christian faith. That very much appealed to me. And historically speaking, I was really captivated by Wesley's, I mean, focus is, I think, the right word. His focus on improving the social condition of the society in which he lived.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he, for example, from very early on in the Methodist movement, had an intentional outreach to alcoholics. Well, I mean, that's centuries before his time.
Mm-hmm.
he was very clear that slavery was evil at a time when that was an economically unpopular position. And then just the whole notion of reinvigorating people's personal faith so that it was not just about church membership. It was not just about kind of a casual affiliation with a building or the local priest who could do your wedding and bury you and baptize mm-hmm. your kids. It was more than that. It was about developing truly a relationship with Christ. Just the whole ethos of the early Methodist society and the foundation of Wesley's theology is just, it's just incredibly compelling to me. It always has been.
Mm-hmm.
From the moment we started learning about it. And I mentioned in the sermon, I'm an oldest child. I'm also an Enneagram 1. I'm a rules follower.
Yeah.
And I love the general rules. I mean, Wesley was super opinionated. I'm not sure he would be a fun guy to hang out with. But he, like his clarity and his focus in describing to people who wanted to grow in their faith what specifically that looked like, mm-hmm. I think is awesome.
Yeah. I do think that's one thing, you know, I'm not trying to bash other denominations, or mainly like more non-denom that mm-hmm. are these new churches that don't really have the rich, deep history. The fact that, you know, you can go to umc.org and look at, you talk about the confession of faith and mm-hmm. our articles of religion. Like, if you really want to know what we believe in, maybe how those came together and how long they've been. And I mean, I know the Book of Discipline isn't like a total page turner. But it is, it for me to see that we have such a strong foundation mm-hmm. that we're just not throwing things together. Mm-hmm. I mean, that gives me, you know, we do have that firm foundation. So that's one thing that I love about the Methodist
100%.
Church.
100%. I mean, you'll sometimes hear people say Methodists don't believe anything. Mm-hmm. Well, that's garbage.
Yeah.
We believe a lot about a lot. And, mm-hmm. and you know, consistent with our founder's opinionated way of showing up in the world, like, we've got a whole book of resolutions that takes a stance on just about everything.
Right.
The social principles are pretty clear stances on most subjects that you can think of. Now, we're not dogmatic, which means that we don't insist that people have to believe this.
Right.
You know, like with the social principles, for example, you know, we've got a statement on war and peace mm-hmm. that I'm sure not everybody would agree with. We've got a statement on the death penalty. I mean, we're very anti-death penalty in the social principles, as is, by the way, the vast majority of Christianity.
Yeah.
That people are free to agree with or not, but we have these very clearly articulated positions that are rooted in our theology. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my work as the chair of the Board of Ordained Ministry is specifically in the area of theology and doctrine. And so, you know, at the end of this month, we're going to be interviewing candidates for commissioning, who are kind of at the beginning of their journey towards ordained ministry. And then in February, we're going to interview candidates for ordination. And your theology's got to be Wesleyan, or you won't.
Yes, as someone that's been through that, it does. And you need to be able to form a sentence when you're answering.
Well, and then you've got to be able to, what's the word I'm looking for? Maturely engage with challenges to your mm-hmm. assertions.
Yeah.
Because that, I mean, good Lord, we do that every sermon mm-hmm. and every interaction with the congregation member who disagrees with this, that, or the other thing. So, the Methodist tradition, the Wesleyan tradition, is a rich one.
Yeah.
And obviously I'm a company man. I mean, I'm sold out. I totally agree to, I just think his interpretation of the Christian faith is entirely consistent with my own.
Yeah. Okay. So in your sermon, you say, this, believing that his church, meaning John Wesley, had lost its passion for the gospel, Wesley wanted to inspire people to deeper discipleship, to a more disciplined, meaningful life as followers of Christ. And so, you know, people don't like the word discipline a lot, I feel like, because in the context of do no harm, it takes enormous discipline to not harm someone else. And I think people don't realize that. Mm. And Wesley lists out ways that we do harm people. Could you name just a few things you...
I brought my discipline.
Okay.
So I've got some in front of me.
Great.
And it's written in the 1739 English.
Okay.
So I didn't read all of this in the sermon, but it's really good. So it is therefore expected of all who continue therein, like in our societies, classes at the time, mm-hmm. church now, that they should continue to evidence their desire of salvation first by doing no harm, by avoiding evil of every kind, especially that which is most generally practiced.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Generally practiced. Yep.
Such as the taking of the name of God in vain, the profaning of the day of the Lord, either by doing ordinary work therein or by buying or selling. So that's a pro-blue laws statement, apparently. he does, I think we're going to talk about drunkenness separately.
Yes.
slaveholding. Again, that's a pretty radical statement. Fighting, quarreling, or brawling. The buying, and this shows you, Wesley was no flaming liberal. The buying or selling of goods that have not paid the duty. Like, the government's got to operate somehow, so pay your taxes.
Yeah.
The giving or taking things on usury, that is unlawful interest. Uncharitable or unprofitable conversation. Particularly, I didn't bring this up in the sermon, but I feel like maybe I should put this at the bottom of my commentaries and stuff.
You should. I'm looking at it as you read it. So
uncharitable or unprofitable conversation, particularly speaking evil of magistrates or of ministers.
Read that again. I'm just kidding.
And then there are some other things that I think we would consider pretty controversial today. The putting on of gold and costly apparel. What do you got? Is your wedding band gold?
No, it sure isn't. It's awesome. From eBay, so.
Mine's platinum, so I'm covered.
Ooh, okay.
Is it platinum? It's silver color. I think it's platinum. The taking such diversions as cannot be used in the name of the Lord Jesus. I'm not sure Wesley would be the most fun guy to hang out with. The singing those songs or reading those books which do not tend to the knowledge or love of God.
Oh, no Harry Potter.
No Harry Potter. Softness and needless self-indulgence.
Uh-oh.
Come on, man. Laying up treasure upon earth. Yikes. That gives you a sense of where Wesley was theologically. Mm-hmm. Borrowing without a probability of paying. Again, he's not a flaming liberal on this, right? Mm-hmm. Or taking up goods without a probability of paying for them.
No credit cards, I guess.
Right? I mean, we're pointing out kind of the historically particular things in some cases.
Yeah.
But the general idea is this very, I think, practical, like very, I would say, inarguable principle of human society and certainly Christian theology, that we not hurt each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I said in the sermon that this year, like our Bishop McKee in North Texas Conference has talked a lot about doing no harm in the context of a pandemic, which means wear a mask and stay 6 feet apart. Like, let's all get through this together. Whatever your own personal level of risk tolerance, we've got responsibilities to some people other than ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And the tie-in to the Galatians text is that Paul says the entire law, like he's making an argument about how you don't have to follow the law. Like the story of the Galatians is that Paul had planted the churches in that region. It's not a city, it's a region. And then some Jewish Christian evangelists had come behind him and said, no, Paul's wrong. You need to be circumcised. You need to follow these particular, we don't know exactly what they were. We were inferring from what Paul's arguing against, but it's certainly circumcision, probably following some kind of Sabbath or festival rituals, maybe even following dietary laws.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul's saying, no, your freedom in Christ frees you from the limits of the law, but the entire law is summed up in the commandment to love your neighbor as yourself.
Yeah.
And here's what it looks like to not love your neighbor as yourself. And he does this long vice list where he lists drunkenness, actually, and it shows up on Wesley's thing. He lists idolatry, for example, where Wesley clearly alludes to here. Dissensions, factions, quarreling, and anger, anything that rips apart the community.
Mm-hmm.
Wesley clearly talks about that when he talks about fighting, quarreling, and brawling. There's a lot of echoes between, I mean, obviously Wesley knew his Bible, and Paul's vice list in Galatians. And Galatians shows up kind of obliquely in these rules of Wesley's, in the first general rule, the specific under the first general rule. And then he says, so that's what it looks like not to love your neighbor. And here's what it looks like to love your neighbor. And then he gives us the fruit of the Spirit, which I know we'll talk more about.
Yeah. No, it's good. So, you know what? You can read Wesley's Do No Harm and you think, well, those are so outdated, but if you really want to like dig into them, so if you were to maybe look at some of the ones that he wrote and put them in like 2021 language or an example, what might be a few?
So, you know, I think he talks a fair amount about economic responsibility, not just in the general rules. He talks about it in a lot of places.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, Jesus does too. And you know, his point when he says, when he argues against usury, for example, usury is economic exploitation of the poor, bottom line. mm-hmm. economic exploitation of those who don't have economic power themselves. Well, that's right in the line of the prophets, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you can open the Old Testament, and they don't use the word usury, but they're talking about the same thing. People with money and power exploiting those without money and power. You know, I think we could talk in terms of do no harm. We could spend a whole probably podcast series on criminal justice reform, mm-hmm. for example. We could certainly, like the way I categorized it in the sermon, in the context of Galatians, is do no harm to yourself. So this is the don't be promiscuous. Don't abuse your body, mm-hmm. which is the temple of the Holy Spirit, Paul says elsewhere. Don't abuse your relationship with God. So don't have idols. Don't take the Lord's name in vain. I mean, that doesn't mean don't cuss. That means don't swear an oath on God, mm-hmm. not intending to keep it. Like, that's a very specific kind of thing there. And then don't do things that harm society, mm-hmm. like the community. Now, Paul's specifically talking about the community of believers in Galatia. But clearly, the law that is summed up in love your neighbor as yourself, neighbor is very clearly defined by Jesus not just to mean fellow Methodists, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Or fellow Christians. It means society in general. And it's really striking to me, as I was preaching a sermon and we were putting together a service that was based thematically on the vice list and fruit of the Spirit in Galatians, the news was unfolding of Paul's list, quarreling, dissensions, factions, anger, enmities. I mean, those are the things Paul lists. Well, I mean, it was fully on display. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to get into whataboutism, you know, and both sides-ism and all that.
Yeah.
But clearly, we need to make the point that clearly there are factions within our society of a variety of political persuasions that seem to have, if not in goal, then certainly in practice, the effect of tearing us apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's not Christian.
Yeah.
That's not faithful. That's not loving your neighbor as yourself. It's not consistent with the fruit of the Spirit that Paul gives us. It's definitely not consistent with Wesley's rule to do no harm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In this little book that we'll probably post about, I just loved this quote. This act of disarming, laying aside our weapons and our desire to do harm is revealing in other ways as well. We discover that we stand on common ground, inhabit a common and precious space, share a common faith, feast at a common table, and have an equal measure of God's unlimited love. Mm. When I am determined to do no harm to you, I lose my fear of you, and I'm able to see you and hear you more clearly. Mm. And I guess I was reading this last night after, you know, listening to your sermon and then everything unfolding, and I just thought, man, everyone's just harming one another, mm-hmm. and we just don't care. And mm-hmm. I'm like, no one's winning this game. Mm-hmm. So I think this concept of doing no harm is just, it's really good for us right now to hear. Mm-hmm. So what do you think?
Now, let's just make a shout out.
Yeah.
That is a very worthwhile book for small groups to
study. Oh, it is.
Yeah.
It is.
Three Simple Rules. I know you've talked about it to Sunday school classes already, but.
Yeah.
Three Simple Rules, Rube and Job. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it at Cokesbury, which would be even better.
Mm-hmm. It's like $7. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a little tiny book. So what do you think we, in order to not harm one another, and looking at the Galatians list and all that, like, what do we really need to lay aside and refrain from in order that we can love one another, love our neighbor? What do you think, what's our hold up, or what do you think we need to do more of?
You know, I think what Paul's talking about in that vice list is the human tendency to be, we need to name it as sin, mm-hmm. not little S sins, like the things we do wrong, but big S sin, like the power of sin in our lives, is that we are so focused on our own, on ourselves, on what we want, on what we desire, on what we think is right, on what, how we think things should be, mm-hmm. to the exclusion of bigger principles and broader faith. Like, so we lose sight of the fact that we are, you know, the way MLK, we're coming upon MLK Day, and we're bound together by a common destiny. Mm-hmm. I mean, nationally, but as Christians, as human beings, I mean, you know, you can think of it in terms of the planet. You can think of it in terms of the various Christian denominations. You can think of it certainly as Americans. There are broader values and concepts and truths that should unite us beyond our petty factions. And when we are locked in our partisan factions, it's very easy to lose sight of the broader mm-hmm. values, narrative, truths that should hold us together.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know. There's just, preachers aren't speechless very often.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, we work in words for a living, as like a, that's our art, that's our practice, our craft. But the kind of unbridled hatred and disdain that has been on display in the streets for a long time now is, it's just poisonous.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Do no harm seems like a very low bar.
Right.
Right.
But we're in love with ourselves. And I think that's, you know, our commitment, our, how we're sold out. We're not sold out to Christ. We're not, that's not our number one. Our number one is always ourselves. And I think that's what we've seen just unraveling, like that we just don't seem to care about others. So I think that's kind of our, you talked about the big sin versus little sin. And I think we just are like, oops, well, I didn't mean to. Or I guess it's not that big of a deal. Like, we really have just dumbed down so many things because, well, that doesn't affect me, so it's not that big of a deal because I don't care about that person or that group of people or whatever. And I don't know, our ideology, what we worship is just, it's all backwards, I feel like. I don't know.
Well, and Paul's vice list includes all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There, you know, there are plenty of Christians who read that vice list, and he opens up with, got it here. Now, the works of the flesh are obvious. Let me just say something here. So when Paul says the works of the flesh, he's not talking about the body is bad.
Okay.
Sex is bad. Like, it's not, what he's talking about. He's talking about we're either slaves to ourselves. The mm-hmm. flesh is a metaphor for our own, our idolatry of our own wants and desires.
Yeah.
I mean, having been raised Catholic, there's look, the Catholic Church has a fair amount of baggage around, that whole phrase.
Okay.
The contrast is between that self-centered focus, that's the flesh, versus the spirit, which is God, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he says, now the works of the flesh are obvious. And he starts with fornication, impurity, and licentiousness. And for way too many people, that's where the list starts and ends. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's not really the focus. I mean, what he's talking, those three things, fornication, impurity, licentiousness, and then when he comes back to drunkenness and carousing, that's how we abuse ourselves, abuse our bodies. But then there are things that are, there's other stuff on the list, right? Idolatry. Now, sorcery's on there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't seem to have a big problem with sorcery.
I don't think so. I don't see it much.
I don't see it much either. Doesn't mean don't read Harry Potter either,
yeah.
By the way. It's just, you know, that's going to take us down a rabbit hole. So idolatry, and then this stuff between the community, enmity, strife, jealousy, anger, quarrels, dissensions, factions, envy, and then he comes back to drunkenness and carousing. So it's those seems like the point I made in the sermon is, yeah, that's all good stuff to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, is anybody really going to argue with the fact that those things are bad for us?
We got to do the drunkenness. What did Wesley say about drunkenness?
I did poke a little bit of fun at this. Gosh, it is funny. It's the funniest. Okay, so he says, The things you should not do include drunkenness, buying or selling spirituous liquors. So buying or selling,
mm-hmm.
right? Or drinking them, comma, unless in cases of extreme necessity. And that is, I think that's hilarious.
It is.
Because he doesn't tell us what extreme necessity is. But I mean, seriously, in the 18th century, there were plenty of places where the only safe thing to drink had alcohol in it because it killed the impurities. Like mm-hmm. clean drinking water was an issue. To, you know, in fairness to Wesley.
Yeah.
I think that's what he's talking about. He's not talking about, like, for instance, my beloved Irish. You know, we were in quarantine over the holidays, and the two Notre Dame games we saw were them getting pounded by Clemson in the ACC title game and then just blown out by Alabama in the semifinals. And there was a time in my life where that would have absolutely qualified as an extreme necessity.
Yeah.
Wesley would not give me a pass on that.
No, not like all of 2020. Because people are like, all of 2020 was extreme necessity. Yeah.
But seriously, in his historical context, like, that was a real thing.
Yeah.
Like, if you have to have something to drink and there is no water, clean water available, ale is not, you know, like, it's better than dying of thirst.
Yeah. Interesting. Most people would read that and be like, oh, I guess this is a necessity. Wesley signs off on it.
But it's funny. It makes me laugh every time I read it.
Okay, you talk about the commandments are 60% shall not and 40% you shall.
Yeah.
And so I do think this whole concept of do harm is not so much about what not to do, but what you should do so you don't do harm. You know, I feel like. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah.
Because we pride ourselves like, well, I don't do that. I don't do that. And then people are like, well, but what do you do to mm-hmm. love?
Well, that's a good actual segue for – that's a good tease for next week. So
okay.
First general rule, do no harm. Second general rule, do all the good you can.
Okay.
So let's bracket that and come back to it next week.
Bracket that. Yeah. Okay, here's a question for you. So you talk about how you've served in four different ministry contexts. Mm-hmm. And so moving around, and they've all been very different. How do you feel like maybe you've been – enlightened, how maybe you've done potential harm, or how have you learned, like, oh, I shouldn't say that because it affects this person, or I don't know, or what are some things, maybe not even your ministry context, but what are things have you learned over the years that maybe you're like, oh, I shouldn't say that or do that because I am doing harm? I don't know.
Yeah. So, you know, here's the way I think I'll answer that.
Okay.
It's not just, so we've served in geographically diverse congregation settings, but we've also served in very ideologically diverse congregations in terms of like the population of the community and the church largely.
Yeah.
Very, very liberal, very conservative, and then centrist. And I think the gift of that, I truly believe that every young pastor should serve churches very different than the context that they come out of,
mm-hmm.
because it gives you a if you're listening, if you're paying attention, that it gives you a different lens to see the world. And so, you know, you can do harm by coming out guns blazing on this, that, or the other issue in such a way that people can't even hear the gospel. And that's not what we're called to do. I mean, Wesley was opinionated. Paul was opinionated. I'm certainly opinionated, but Wesley and Paul both were very keen on preaching the gospel in a way people could hear.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Paul was a master of it. When you read his story throughout the New Testament, he didn't go to this pagan temple and say, "Y'all are a bunch of fools. You can only believe in you're believing in a bunch of stuff that doesn't exist. You do all you should believe." Like, he came, he engaged them in a way that they could understand, mm-hmm. to reveal to them that there is actually only one God.
Yeah.
This unknown God is the way he puts it in Acts. It's a great story. Because the alternative is to do harm, mm-hmm. to talk to people in a way they can't hear. I just love that story from Paul. And, you know, Wesley, as opinionated as he was all about gathering people in small groups so that we could grow together in our faith. And so I think the gift of being in a variety of settings is that you you get to experience the Christian spiritual journey from in a way you hadn't before.
Yeah.
And it allows you to maybe be more sympathetic to a view you wouldn't otherwise be. And certainly to understand others' experience in a way you otherwise wouldn't.
Yeah. And that's why I think it's so important to do your best not to live in a bubble. I mean, right now we're all kind of living in a safety bubble.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it is good to reach out, read, listen to different people, read different authors, just to get a different perspective, because you may come to a realization, oh, I had no idea that maybe this way of living or what I'm doing might be contributing to some harm to someone else. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just encourage you to try to get outside your group some mm-hmm. time to time, because it's so easy to get sucked into just, well, I'm around people that look like me, think like me, believe like me, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not always the best for us.
Well, yeah, I would say it's never the best for us. I mean, even though it's more comfortable.
Oh, for sure.
From the most liberal person I know to the most conservative person I know, people of faith anyway, they have reasons for the way they think they think. And, you know, if we're serious about the notion that we're all in this together, mm-hmm. then seeking first to understand is a pretty good principle.
Yeah.
That is a way in which we do no harm.
Yeah. So this is kind of like a very, I don't know if it's a basic question, but I guess sometimes when I think about do no harm, and I think about, you know, what do you do when someone does attack you or is mean to you? And specifically, like, what do you teach your boys, like, if they're bullied or mm-hmm. teased, like, mm-hmm. what kinds of things do you teach them?
There's a tension between turning the other cheek mm-hmm. and setting boundaries.
Yeah.
I've shared this before. I've never been, the Sermon on the Mount has never come easy to me. Mm-hmm. I think it's about setting, I'm going to quote Paul again, or at least, a letter attributed to Paul, Ephesians, speaking the truth in love, I think is a really important thing. And, when you're being bullied, when you're being teased, for the boys, I'm talking about, my children, you know, saying something that is not okay, walking, getting help if you need help, walking mm-hmm. away from conflictive situations. That's all really important. Those are important skills, because it's very easy to speak the truth all the time and not really have a whole much love mixed in. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to, I don't know, easy is not probably not the right word, but there is a way in which people show up in the world speaking the truth all the time, you know, just the cold, hard truth, and they don't have any love mixed in. Or they're so loving that they don't want to confront anyone and don't want to speak the truth. It's a balance of both. And as Christians, we're called to do both. Yeah. You know, when we round out the series, do no harm, do all the good you can, stay in love with God, or the way Wesley put it was attend upon all the ordinances of God, then you're well equipped, I think, to handle those situations.
Yeah. No, that's good. Okay. Is there anything else that you felt like you wanted to say in your sermon, or?
You know, the way I wrapped up the sermon is the list of ways in which we should do no harm is, you know, if it's not infinite, it's certainly very, very long. And mm-hmm. so for me, the way to do no harm is to bear the fruit of the Spirit. Mm-hmm. And I think that if that is our ethos in life, then the do no harm thing kind of takes care of itself.
Yeah.
So we should probably just wrap it up with the fruit of the Spirit. Yes. Have we named them yet?
No, we haven't. I was just going to say, is there one particularly you want to see us as a society live into more in 2021? Any of them?
I think they're all pretty important.
Yeah,
they're
pretty important. It can't be this one. So there are
nine of them, right? Love, joy, peace, patience. That's probably a pretty good one right now. Mm-hmm. Kindness.
Yep.
If you can't be kind.
That's like my word.
Don't be anything.
Yeah.
Generosity, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And then Paul gets a little sassy. He says, there is no law against such things. You can see him shaking his head when he says it. That's actually the law of God.
Yeah.
For Paul.
I think that will do it.
That'll do it for this week. We got a couple more weeks to delve into this. So thank you very much, Reagan, for the thoughtful exchange, as always.
Mm-hmm.
I know you and I will both continue to be in prayer for this conflicted nation that we love.
Yeah.
And I think that as we seek to bear witness to the love of God in this world, you know, keeping in mind Paul's fruit of the Spirit is a pretty good way to go about that. So, thank you, friends, for listening. It's always wonderful to be with you. We're super excited to launch into 2021, and we will be back with you next week. God bless you.